The Pittsburgh Festival Orchestra and the Fox Chapel Presbyterian will present the music of George Frederick Handel on Sunday, October 23rd. David Billings will play Organ Concertos No. 4 and 6 with the Quartz Quartet comprised of Ellen Maria Willis, Patrick Forsythe, Stephen Weiss, Paula Tuttle, joined by oboist Cindy Anderson and bassist Brian Stahursky. Also on the program is Handel's Water Music, 4 p.m., admission is free, and it's a free will donation. Come join the fun. This week, the Pittsburgh Festival Orchestra will play Handel's Water Music. We aren't doing the full orchestra version, and it's not exactly the way Handel originally performed it. We're doing the Oxford edition, which is a chamber orchestra version. When Water Music premiered, it had exotic horns and a 50-piece orchestra, and it was an outdoor concert that moved downstream on a summer's eve. The king had his royal barge, and the orchestra had another, and they simply floated all night and partied. Welcome back to Accelerando, and today we're talking about Handel and London musicians. When King George I asked George Frederick Handel to compose music to be performed on the Thames, Handel knew it was time to pull out all the stops. The concert would be played on a barge with an orchestra of 50 musicians, big enough to be heard across the water, floating downstream, and loud enough to be heard on the shores for the people on land. Handel understood the art of showmanship. He knew how to please the crowds and the king. King George had his own royal barge, and the orchestra barge followed him upstream to Chelsea, where he disembarked, hung around for a bit, and then returned, with the orchestra in tow, back to Whitehall. When they started out, they were going upstream, but the tides were rising, so there was no need for oars, and there was no loud sloshing from rowing. A bit of luck there. And on the way back, it was also easy, as the tides shifted. The whole venture was such a success, the king did it again, twice. And the river was filled with boats and barges full of people that wanted to join the event, hear the music, and float on the river. And the shores were crowded too. It must have been a sight to see, all the torches and decorations, and the clamor of partiers and festivities, hanging with the monarch of England. I sometimes wonder how the musicians read the music by candlelight at night on the barge. My eyes get very tired reading at the pit for 3 hours, and my light is surely better than their torches. These musicians were playing for at least 5 hours, because the trip started at 8 p.m., and the return trip started at 11 p.m. Handel must have taken this into consideration. The great composer must have had a prescription in mind, something like this. He needed at least 3 hours of music, but it couldn't be a giant score like an opera or an oratorio. It had to be simple enough to make it only a dozen pages, not a part of 50 pages. Something the musicians could read in bad lights, something that carried outdoors in maybe less than ideal conditions, but something festive, breathtaking, novel, and appealing. Handel also knew what the king needed, not just a spectacle, but a diversion, meaning something to point the public's attention away from the embarrassing actions of the royal family. Water music and the festivities were meant to draw attention away from the Prince of Wales, the king's son, who was forming his own political faction. And yes, the king was throwing an event to take the light off his personal and political problems. It would be a sensation that would delight the public and at the same time remind everyone that the king was, well, the king. If Handel knew anything, he knew how to fashion a work that was both popular and novel, and something that sounded a bit English too. At the time, the tastes in London were focused on international flavors. European dances were all the rage, so the French overture and the dance movements gave the piece fashionable content. And the hornpipes, the signature movements in each of the suites, gave it a little nationalist flavor. because the hornpipe was English, very English. It gave royal punctuation to the monarch's celebration. Taking a stroll up the Thames for an otherwise unspecified trip. Handel's exceptional stagecraft also came into play. Importing exotic foreign musicians was common practice at the time, and the Bohemian horn players were from Bohemia too. The crowd loved this, and the general opinion of the time was anything from outside was better, more interesting, flavorful, and chic. Even in modern times, this preference for musicians being from somewhere else seems to exist, even though it's illogical because everyone has to be from somewhere. When Lorne Mazel became the music director of the Pittsburgh Symphony, he was returning to his hometown. But in New York, London, and Vienna, he was considered more exotic, even if slightly so. But even if you're from a place and returning, as Handel did when he took a position as Kapellmeister in Hanover for a year, that's much better than never leaving. England, and London particularly, was so enamored with the foreign-born, the homegrown musicians never got a foothold in their home country. And England paid a price for this attitude. In the 19th century, England became known as the land without music, its own music. Looking at a list of English composers chronologically, the Renaissance and Baroque periods are pretty well represented, with Handel being included in the list, but the classical era, zilch. The Romantic era, not until Elgar. And finally, at the turn of the century, the list becomes populated with better or well-known composers. London had the most thriving concert life in Europe during those times, and it was one of the most bustling theater and concert scenes in Europe, but only one that promoted outsiders. It was the destination and the land of opportunity for foreign-born composers. Handel, C.P.E. Bach both moved there. Mozart and Haydn visited often as well-paid composers and musicians. Handel's brand also meant quality. He handpicked the very best musicians and singers, which he searched for when he met them on a trip for that purpose across Europe. He brought the most celebrated singers, including the most famous Italian castrati, to London. And when his audiences tired of a particular singer, he brought in new ones. I like to think if Handel were alive today, we would call him an entrepreneur with his finger on the pulse of the changing cultural climate. So think about the most successful entrepreneurs of our century, and maybe Steve Jobs comes to mind, because he knew what people wanted, and he gave us the iPhone, and he took chances too. He gave us something flashy, and he stayed ahead of the times. In another company, say Microsoft, Steve Ballmer, who took over after Bill Gates, he proceeded to ruin the company because he couldn't see the indicators and he missed all the trends. Handel made no such mistakes. He was right on target with his audience, and he did a lot of things to stay ahead. For example, after Italian opera went out of fashion around 1720, Handel started writing English oratorios, and he developed a style, and the public flocked to his productions of Messiah and Samson. Eventually, Handel decided to start presenting works himself because he could make more money, and he would rent the theaters and hire the performers. But then he started running up against some stiff competition, and he upped his game. He wrote some organ concertos, and he presented himself playing these virtuoso organ concertos on the intermissions. We're actually playing two of these on the same concert with the water music, and David Billings is on the organ. Here's what Beethoven said about Handel. He said, "Handel is the greatest composer that ever lived. I would uncover my head and kneel down on his tomb." That's Beethoven. And Mozart also admired him. He said, "Handel understands effect better than any of us when he chooses. He strikes with a thunderbolt." You really could say Handel had good instincts all around, politically and musically. He pleased the king and the people with his water music. The dances were specific to different parts of Europe. The jig, bray, and minuets are French, and saraband is Spanish, and hornpipe is English. Handel's signature was that he was able to write music that reached beyond aristocracy to the people. His brand was cosmopolitan. His music was so popular that it didn't fall out of popularity after his death, and he was the first composer to do so in England until the appearance of Elgar. And being foreign-born, he was very successful in London. He died a wealthy man, and he was one of the first musicians to have works performed many times after the premiere. His Messiah was so popular, men were asked not to wear their swords because they took up too much space, and more audience could see the performances if they left them out in the hall. Handel was great for so many reasons. And you know, there was a spark in his craft that made his art last the test of time. He didn't just want to please the king, and he didn't just want to please the public either. Handel wanted to change people. He said, "I should be sorry if I only entertained them. I wish to make them better." You might be listening to this after the concert on Sunday, but that's okay. You can go find some Handel and listen to it. It will make your life better. Thanks for listening, and thanks for checking the show notes at accelerandocast.com. We'll see you next time. On November 1st, the Diamante Trio with Lily Abreu will perform at the Monroeville Library. The concert is free, and it's a great opportunity to get a copy of our CD, No More Blues. It's at 7 p.m., the admission is free, and the seating is limited. Come hear lots of fun Latin American music.